It is time to welcome in David Tarachuk once again. David joins us on a Friday morning with the Media Beat. He's a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief, and he has his own terrific website, themediabeat.us. Good morning, David.
Well, hello. Good to be joining you from the media capital of the world, New York City.
It's there's a lot of media to talk about.
All around the world, yes, indeed.
It really is absolutely amazing how the media, not only do we cover the media stories, but the way the media actually reacts and covers stories. I guess the first thing I want to ask you about is watching all the different coverage of what's going on with voting rights in this country.
Oh, extraordinary. Yeah. Well, the latest step, of course, is in that state of ours, amongst these great United States, Florida, the leader in so many things, the leader, it seems, in tamping down effectively on people's access to the right to vote. The latest bit of legislation signed into force by the governor, Rick DeSantis, who's clearly hoping to make this issue a vehicle for his future political ambitions. Perhaps he's going to run for president for the Republican, in the Republican interest. You never know. Anyway, he signed a new piece of legislation restricting people's access to the vote. They call it the voter system, its integrity. But I that's a very questionable concept, since its actual effect is to limit the number of people who get to be able to vote. And it's very interesting, especially for if you want, as you were saying, to consider the way that the media covers this issue, to see how it was signed into force, this new piece of legislation. Governor Rick DeSantis signed it in a hotel ballroom in Florida, out of town for him, away from the state capital, and did so in interesting media conditions. It was behind closed doors in this ballroom, and no media were allowed in, no television coverage was allowed in, except for one outfit, Fox News. And it appeared to be, certainly from the raucous cheering that went on in it, during it, it seemed to be very much a party kind of event. It was it was coverage by the Fox and Friends show, long associated with the ex-president Trump. In fact, it was pretty much a venue, a regular venue for Trump to chat with dedicated supporters and appear to be their most cherished guest so often. Anyway, that program was the outlet for this signing ceremony, and in the words of an old news editor who used to be my boss, it's the kind of event that just stank.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
It just stank of partisanship and being a complete media opportunity for one particular interest. The getting together in bed of one particular media outfit and one particular kind of politician.
What's interesting about looking at what's going on with the Republican Party, and I'm surprised that media hasn't picked up on what I think is going on here. None of these people that are coming out in support of Donald Trump, in support of actually what happened at the Capitol, they don't want Donald Trump to run for president. They really don't want. They want Donald Trump's supporters.
You bet. Yeah.
That's
very clear from the way that they're setting about it. And you know, wise media commentators are onto that. But in general, it seems to be being reported as some sort of Trump research. Well, there's a hint a lot of the time of people believing this is some kind of Trump resurgence. I noticed some media outfits are calling him, are calling out the, or at least underlining the possibility. And it is just that, the possibility of him running himself again in 2024. But more likely as to be the case is the more likely to be accurate is what I'm trying to say are those commentators who are underlining the fact that Trump can't help but want himself to be a kingmaker right now. He's more likely to be and will be, I guess, for some time in absence of anybody else, something of a kingmaker as Republicans jostle for position towards the midterms and then eventually to the next general election.
It's just an amazing situation. It's kind of like watching a slow motion car wreck or train crash.
Really, well, one of the oddities of the Florida case, of course, is that in putting the restrictions, the new restrictions they have on mail-in ballots, they may be sure that the Republicans, at least, may be shooting themselves in the foot. Historically, in Florida, unlike some other states, mail-in balloting has traditionally favored the Republican interest, which means that this piece of public of state legislation may, in fact, just go the very opposite way from what they secretly, it is said, want to see happen, which is that they want to boost their own, self-interest in future elections, and it's going to actually lose them votes, which is not exactly what sensible politicians would normally do.
All right, is it time for our fanfare?
Oh, let's bring in the fanfare. I want to praise someone. Yes, the fanfare goes to a political reporting outfit, one that really helped very significantly to change the landscape in the United States. It's Politico, the website. Once upon a time, in the 20-teens, was a kind of a new kind of website, taking away from established media, and now it's a bit of a media reversal, at least things happening in reverse. Instead of new media displacing old media, this particular media outfit, Politico, the Politico website and the Politico electronic media presence all over the world now, has now started to, it's not actually very new, this, it's happened some time ago, but it's worth reporting on the perhaps oddity of them creating old media. The new media creates old media in the form of a print magazine with the same name, Politico. But what I want to draw attention to is this global spread of Politico, and for a particular reason. Politico now has a very substantial European operation, and because of what's been going on in Europe and in the UK also, perhaps even more what's happening in the UK recently, I've been asked by a lot of Americans, where can they find good American coverage, good coverage by Americans of Europe? And I want to point everybody in the direction of Politico Europe now, edited as it is by an excellent journalist called Stephen Brown. And it's timely, and I wanted to bring it up this week because of the very fine coverage of Europe, obviously, but especially the UK now, geographically Europe, not institutionally in Europe anymore, of course, ever since Brexit, and most especially for the coverage of Scotland. As you'll know, the UK in general, but most interestingly, Scotland have been going to the polls over the last 24 hours. And, the count started about 18 hours ago, I guess, and the results are coming in slowly because COVID has made the whole counting process slow, and we're all already finding that it's a major shift in British politics. And most especially, perhaps, although this will take some time to become very clear over the weekend because of all the scattered constituencies involved, but most especially in Scotland, as you and I have been talking about in recent weeks. So if anyone wants a good briefing for what's happening in Scotland, interestingly enough, it's the originally American institution of the Politico website that they should go to visit to get a really good briefing. Wonderful articles called, you know, really, really insightful notions like how Scotland has changed since the independence referendum. That was way back in 2014, of course. And here's a cryptic, well, not so much cryptic, but punchy little headline: how the Scottish National Party became the only show in town. That's a provocative way to get your attention about the issue. And of course, you know, with the kind of personality-based insight that so many journalists like to take, there's also a story saying Boris Johnson's Scotland headache is only going to get bigger, as indeed it is. I think I was looking at some polling, public opinion polling, not the official poll, results for Scotland on the eve of the actual parliamentary elections. Public opinion poll registered that Boris Johnson's disapproval rates in Scotland had leapt up to a percentage up in the 70s. So one of the best things for the other parties in Scotland, particularly the Scottish National Party, has been whenever we've pointed this out in our slot here, whenever Boris Johnson makes a visit north of the border into Scotland, it boosts their fortunes. The best weapon the Scottish National Party itself has in Scotland right now is Boris Johnson. So, and that's the kind of insight that I think you'll find running through the coverage of Politico. I heartily commend their work on Europe, Britain, and especially at the moment Scotland.
It's going to be interesting to see with Scotland when another vote is going to come up, because I just think that it's going to happen where they're going to just look to break away, and of course that's the last thing that Boris Johnson wants.
Sure, the Scottish Nationalists are indeed campaigning on wanting to get a referendum soon. No specific date has been put up. Interestingly, the Labour Party, who are having a very bad time in UK as a whole, certainly in England, already a very important parliamentary constituency, has been lost overnight as we look at the results today. A really important constituency for Labour up in the north, the previously highly industrialized northeast of England, a town called Hartlepool, has gone horrifically and a real shock horror result, as journalists would say, in the northeast. It's been a complete trouncing of Labour. It's traditionally very much a Labour seat. The town of Hartlepool is the constituency, and after century, well, I exaggerate saying centuries, but many, many decades being a sure Labour Party seat, has now gone to the Tories, to the Conservative Party. But over the border in Scotland, the Labour Party is poised, or at least has been hoping, to reverse its general decline over the last 20 to 30 years. And under a new leader, a really quite bright leader, and they've had many leaders in the last 10 years, five leaders in a decade, that's quite an indication of a troubled party. Well, now it's looking in slightly better shape, and they've made an interesting calculation. They say that the issues that Scots really care about more than separating from the UK is basic economic well-being, and the new leader wants to change the subject, and so much so that he said, well, we're going to put our cards on the table right now and say that we do not want another referendum on separation from the UK for another 5 years. Let's just take it off the agenda and and concentrate on the economy and people's livelihoods, and make this a real bread and butter campaigning. It'll be interesting to see that, how that turns out. Already, as I say, in the rest of the UK, it's been a bad overnight for Labour, and a Labour grandee, Lord Mandelson, who was, as Peter Mandelson, you may recall, known as the Svengali of Tony Blair. He was, in many ways, the strategist who helped Labour get its victories in the late 90s and early 20th century. And he was, in fact, the Member of Parliament for Hartlepool. And he's been pointing out, not surprisingly, that this is a terrible turn for the party, and it hurts him. He says pretty seriously, he confesses to something that he describes as mild fury. That's a bit of English understatement for you. He's pointing out that the Labour Party is just on the point now of being 16 years out of power. If you remember when Tony Blair came in a remarkable turnaround for the party then, a successful turnaround, Labour had been out of power for 17 years then. And he points out that in recent elections, the order of results has been basically, for Labour, it's been lose, 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 Blair, 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 and then lose, 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 lose again. So he's clearly trying to point out that there are ways that Labour can win, and it's towards those Blair victories that they must look to see how they might do better. And it's possible that in Scotland that may already be happening, but those results, as I say, won't be coming in until the weekend is well through.
Well, as Americans can look at this, they can just look at what happened in the 2016 election when Donald Trump just stole the heartland of Democratic support to win the presidency. Of course, by losing the popular vote, taking the states that Democrats took for granted for so long, and what just happened in England is an exact replica of that. Except, I don't know if the Labour Party has the tenacity to come back like the Democrats did.
There are interesting similarities. You're absolutely right. I wouldn't say it's a dead ringer, no. But it's there's a lot of political parallels there. And they need something. The Labour Party in the UK as a whole, now led by a man called Keir Starmer, a redolent name for Labour supporters, because his first name goes right back to one of the most famous Labour Party leaders, a Scot called Keir Hardie, in the beginning of the 20th century, and he's said to be a safe pair of hands. However, those hands have not delivered victory today, and are not likely to do so over the weekend either. It's looking very bad for Labour. So there again, we might have an occasion to consider the leadership once more, and the Labour Party, to pick up your parallel further, will certainly be looking for a Biden, someone who can get rid of the Joker. Is how many Labour Party feel about it. Many people in the Labour Party feel about it. They've got a Joker in charge, a Conservative Joker in the shape of Boris Johnson, not in every way like similar to Trump, but similar enough to make the parallel work for a lot of Labour Party supporters who are really desperate to change the equation and get back to some form of real political calculation for what works with traditional Labour supporters, because what's been working for the Labour Party traditionally has not been working in the last 10 to 15 years.
Well, you used the word joker, and I hate to jump here back to the United States, but as somebody who is from the media capital of the world, I would be remiss if I didn't bring up Rudy Giuliani.
I don't know why you would put those two words together in the same sentence, but that name and that attribute. But yes, many people get a good giggle out of Rudy Giuliani. The man's back in the news, and there are many people just rubbing their palms together in glee at his misfortunes at the moment.
And they're self-created misfortunes. I mean, just think about this. Here's a man who had a, whether you liked him or not, had a terrific reputation when he ran the justice system that now is actually going after him. And I look at Rudy Giuliani and I just am amazed at his downfall, his personal downfall, not even political, his personal downfall. The man who had quite a lot of power to yield as mayor and also as an attorney before that, to see this man the way he is now is truly a sad story.
Sure, and very, very, excuse me, very much in the category of what we were talking about earlier, people hoping to travel on Trump's fading coattails, and yet he's, you know, perhaps the only explanation in Giuliani's case is that he really is a true believer. That may be the case, but his judgment certainly has now very fully come into question, and as a lawyer and as a former prosecutor himself, he's got himself into really deep trouble, it doesn't look good, especially for someone who has been a member of the New York Bar and honored in many, many ways. And yet he's tied up in this tacky case, which gets tackier by the minute as more and more details get inevitably, as they are, leaked from the investigation, and the fact that that investigation includes simultaneous 6 a.m. raids on him and an illegal associate just paints a picture of a man who absolutely qualifies for that old phrase, how are the mighty fallen.
And just to switch back here, what's up in New York City politics? I mean, with de Blasio leaving, who's next to step into that?
Well, it's a freshly open field, because the one of the most likely successors, the one who is running highest in polling, is a man who's had many offices in the New York City government system. Scott Stringer might have been expected to be not a complete shoo-in for the Democratic primary nomination, but but looking very strong for a long time. And certainly some of the best name recognition in city politics, at least, Scott Stringer. But Scott Stringer is now the subject of sexual abuse allegations, and the institutional support around him has been crumbling. And now it's very much an open field again, and there are lots of people running. 20 or so contenders that can be named and have seen to be, you know, to have some sort of political clout. a lot of people registering, just about 5 or 6 or up to 8 or 9% name recognition, but many more, especially Andrew Yang, who has a lot of name recognition from having run for president, is among those better known contenders. And so we wait to see who ends up being the Democratic choice for mayor in New York City, because of course the Democratic choice is almost inevitably going to be the elected mayor.
It goes along with the rest of political stories in this country nowadays. I don't know whether I've seen politics in any worse shape in my 68 years alive, and probably since I was probably 10 or 11 with discussing things with my dad and mom and stuff like that. It's just a landscape that almost looks like Berlin after the war, really.
It's certainly dispiriting, yeah.
We'll see what happens in the next week or so, David. We'll speak to you then. Have a great week.
Yeah, you too. Thanks a lot.
All right. David Taraschuk with The Media Beat. Of course, his own website is themediabeat.us. You can find David on our website on demand, robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on The Media Beat with David Taraschuk.